Welcome to the RPG After Years, your weekly show covering all things RPGs from the past, present, and future. This is episode 112. I'm Scott.
I'm Rich.
And joining us today is my one and only...
It's Corey.
Welcome back to the show, Corey. Thanks for joining us again.
Oh, look at that. Twice, 2 weeks in a row.
That's something.
Yeah, that's a nice change of pace.
I had to drag you out of bed today, though. So,
it was hard to get out of bed this morning.
Coming up on today's episode, we're going to complete our review of Bandai Namco's 2021 action RPG hit.
And we will actually conclude our first checkpoint in the RPG club, Final Fantasy 13.
Right. And we're reviewing Tales of Arise. Bring a tear to my eye. Since this is a review episode, we won't be doing all of our normal segments. No news, no tea time. Well, actually, there is a tea time if we get to the RPG club today, but no catch up, just straight up review goodness. But before we hit that up, here are some quick show updates. Rich, what's going on with the RPG club currently?
Oh man, the RPG Club. So in case you guys don't know, the RPG Club is a RPG game that our Patreons have voted and nominated. And then we do checkpoints. We break the game up into checkpoint sections, and then we review each of those sections, and then we do a big final review. So the current game is Final Fantasy 13, which is phenomenal. The current checkpoint as of right now, because we just finished checkpoint one, we're on checkpoint two, is finished chapter five, which is Gapra Whitewood after a scene where Snow boards an air bike.
Yep. So the very, yes, you'll see a scene where Snow gets on an air bike, and that is the very last scene of chapter five. People seem to be confused about when chapters actually end. So being very specific here.
Yeah. Sunday, May 29th is your due date. So be prepared.
Be prepared.
I had the same thought.
I'll also mention there is a little cheeky side RPG club going on in our Discord involving.
Damn it, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. I had the same thought when he put this together. It's like, damn it. it's for Chrono Cross. We're not going to be spending a lot of time on the main show talking about this side RPG club, this bastard club. But people are playing it with a checkpoint system, just like the RPG club. So you can find the link to our Discord on our pinned tweet on Twitter or in the show notes if you want to join in on that. Right now we're playing Radical Dreamers as a sort of a preamble. Speaking of weird build projects, the Materia Lockdown is still going. If anybody wants to join in on that, it is a charity challenge where your characters in Final Fantasy VII are assigned classes. You can find out more info about that at materialockdown.com. Moving on to the RPG releases, here's what came out this past week. We got Prinny Presents NIS Classics Volume 2 on Switch in Europe on the 13th, May 13th. Makai Kingdom Reclaimed and Rebound came to PC on May 13th in Europe as well. ZHP Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Evil Man came to PC on the 13th. Little Witch in the Woods entered Early Access on the 16th. Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song came to everything on May 19th. And Soldiers came to everything on the 19th as well. But what do we got coming up this week, Rich?
So in the coming week, we only have, looks like, about two of them, which is Ni No Kuni Cross Worlds. That is the mobile game, May 25th. And then Maglam Lord on the PC, May 30th.
Right.
So not a lot.
Yep. Slow week. But with all that out of the way, let's get after the woman in red and figure out how we're going to save the world. Okay, so we got through the first half or so of the story in last week's episode, and where we left off was literally at the start of part two of the game. All five lords have been defeated, and we, our characters, are in Ganatharos. The Rennis Alma has been created and stolen by a mysterious woman in red, and I believe there is a several-month time skip at this point, so we're going to pick up after that time skip. Or maybe it's just 1 month. Is it several months or 1 month?
It's 1 month. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a month.
All right.
So let's dive back into the after that whole situation. So I love here my notes. One of the first part of that, I just put a bunch of letters in there because I was using that to go back my little checkpoints. The I can't even pronounce that. Akfodl Hills.
Akfodl.
Akfodl Hills.
Akfodl McFodl.
McFodl Hills. So you're at where we left off was at Ganatharos. The town's been liberated. The world itself is, seems like the everything is on the right path to keeping everybody on the same
level. The characters have basically been spending the month helping the residents of Ganatharos like learn to not do be things. Zombies, like be independent people.
Yeah, like think for yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, and also the world itself has changed. So there are no more lords. There's no more of the crown contest. None of that stuff is still going on anymore because you've defeated all the lords. So like Scott said is, you know, they're learning how to do things. So the next thing that you're going to do with is find the food thief in Delferis Castle. So what that little quest line is basically is you find there's remnants of Volram's, I guess his legion, some of his Renan soldiers are stealing foods, not really stealing food as opposed to keeping the same system in place where the Danon folk are just bringing them food. So you have to go in and clear all that out and just figure out what's happening with everybody else in the town just to get them all more self-sustaining. And You have the opportunity to do all your side quests here, the remaining stuff. Have you guys done all that? Did you guys do a lot of the side quests?
We got the platinum. We did everything. Yep. So,
look at you all being all fancy. I did not.
First platinum in a long time.
Nice. So once you do all that stuff, this is when the world changes. So things happen. Renna, if you can actually see Renna in the sky, it's the planet that supposedly were Renna soldiers and everybody's came from. Renna actually transforms. It turns into this giant like satellite looking thing and it shoots a beam of light down onto Danna, but then shoots a wedge, essentially, it's like a spear, into Danna and starts sucking up astral energy in, I would say, probably in massive amounts of forms of...
Right in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. So you have to then find a ship, take the ship to the wedge, and then you have to fight your way through the wedge to find out what's going on with things. But you discover that astral energy is actually alive. So what'd you guys think of that whole deal with,
this is where Renwell goes on almost like a spirit quest and figures out that like Danna has its own spirit and will. And that's what the astral energy represents.
So the astral energy itself, because it talks to everybody, like it does, it starts to say like these things are bad. Don't let it happen. It's the astral great spirit. I feel like this is kind of like the Gaia theory. If you guys know what that is, in a sense.
Yeah, I could see that.
Okay.
Sort of like the live stream in Seven as well.
Yeah, basically. So the Gaia theory is, in case everybody knows, is basically the world is alive and it has its own flow and energy and everything else, and that's what makes the world turn. So the astral energy is being sucked away and you have a boss fight that basically is warped astral energy of monsters I want to say, if that sounds familiar to you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So you fight that, you figure out that you need to go to Rena after the boss fight.
Yeah, to stop them basically from stealing anymore, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because the wedge is done. They stop the wedge. The wedge is no longer functional at the moment, but doesn't mean that it can't come back.
Yeah. And so I guess the wedge was kind of like their since all the lords are defeated, like their last ditch attempt was like, well, fuck Dana and just take everything now. So.
Well, I don't think it was their last ditch effort. I think it was the final stage.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they were doing everything and you know the lords were sending up all this astral energy. Now that they had enough, it's time to do the rest of it.
Right. So picking up there, what's the boss fight here? Is it just the wedge itself?
It's the monster inside the wedge.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's a big plant-looking thing.
Yeah. Okay. So. I remember that. So they don't really know how they're going to get to Rena. And I think you go back to Ulzbek at this point to talk to the other resistance members from earlier in the game to try to like get some ideas about what's going on. And what is it? There's rumors that there's like a ship nearby that can get there.
Well, yeah. What they figured out was, you know, Alfin had to get here somehow. But the problem is that all of the ships from Rena are gone. There are no ships or anything to get back to Rena. So they had to figure out a way to get back there. They remembered that Alfin came here not too long ago. Like he showed up about a year or so beforehand. So the ship that brought him here 300 years ago is somewhere there. So they figured, well, let's go back to Ulzbek to maybe it's there.
Okay, yeah. So they go to the nearby Berg Volcano. This is just a pretty standard dungeon. At the end, you do fight a boss called the Astral Beast Efreet Malum. And I think that's about it there. After that, you do find the ship. It's like kind of covered in foliage. But then we get to what's probably my favorite scene in the game. So in the middle of the night while they're camping out, Shion decides that she's going to try to take the ship for herself because she doesn't like want their help. And this is like her mission and she still has trust issues and all that shit. Of course, Alfin catches her. And then they have this big moment where Shion finally unloads on them and tells them like all her feelings. The party is like very supportive towards her and tell her that, you know, we've got you, girl, basically. And then of course the vocal theme is playing in the background during this. Corey, I got a little watery eyed. I think Corey full on cried over there.
I got a little watery eyed too, because what is it with Ray Chase and campfire scenes?
That's a good point.
Like, he delivers such good voice acting when it comes to campfire scenes. Like, I don't know if he's just now in his whole entire life, every time he has a campfire, like he goes and does campfires.
He tells a story and like everybody cries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, him going to first grade or, you know, him losing his first tooth and everybody's just crying. It's so epic. So it was a very traumatic scene.
Yeah. He, like you said, he does a great job at those scenes. And that entire scene, I mean, it was a long cut scene, but it was really good.
Yeah. He like grabs her hands, even though he can feel pain now, and like, I guess just bears the pain of the thorns. And then the rest of the party is also, the only thing I would have changed about this scene is I would have like had all the entire party, like touch her or whatever, like a circle of trust almost type deal.
Yeah, I mean, I would do that. Are you kidding me? I'd let them all touch her. I'm like, there you go. No, that probably hurts.
I couldn't.
Yeah, I don't think all of them could have taken it.
Yeah.
But Alfin can feel pain, so the rest of them can put up with it. So
he's in love.
Exactly. There's a difference.
Yeah. Like, I guess you could. I mean, I would still do it. Are you kidding me? That hurts.
By the way, I've tried to look up this scene on YouTube, and the only versions I can find have the music muted. I'm assuming there's some kind of like copyright thing where Atlas is like, no, can't have this scene on YouTube, which is sad because I want to watch it again. But anyway, so they get in the ship and they take off towards, they go to Linigus first, right? which is
it's the satellite.
It's like a checkpoint. Yeah,
right. So they go to Leningus, and like how you wrote here, this place is a mess. People don't really know what's going on down on Dana. They seem to be even more like in the dark than you, well, more in the dark than you would have thought that they were would be about what's going on. You kind of learn that nobody has seen or heard from the Sovereign in a long time. And supposedly he's just back on Rena. And then also there's this weird part where you go around just gathering information from all the Renans, and like you get a scene for each of the now dead lords about how they were terrible people, but they had redeeming qualities too. And this part was just making me roll my eyes, because it's like, no, they were literally slavers. Most of them, all of them were actual, like, terrible assholes.
They were trash.
Yeah.
They killed people.
You cannot redeem that.
Yeah.
Other than Noelle.
Yeah, he's the only one.
And I will say this part of the game is probably might be the worst part of the game for me, because there is a lot of just walking around and talking to people in this section, and it's just very, very slow part. I thought the pacing was bad here.
Yeah. Well, you also have Dol Halim's like family and friends, or not really family, as opposed to like his friend and his ex-girlfriend. Whole scene played out.
I believe her name is Faria, right?
I think so. Farah.
So you do run into this girl that apparently has a history with Dol Halim. And you kind of get some more on Dol Halim's backstory during this part too, where apparently he used to play music in the streets with Faria and two of his other friends. But Faria hates Dol Halim's guts because she blames Dol Halim for the death of her fiance or whatever, who was in the music group with him. I can't remember the details of why she blamed Dol Halim, though. Do you guys?
Because he killed her. Or he killed him. They were doing kind of practice or something together, and they were told, if I remember correctly, they were told not to hold back. And the friend tried to do something that was shady or kind of like unhonorable. So Dol Halim ended up killing him.
The friend wanted to be in the crown contest.
Yeah,
right.
I forget what his name was, but so she blames Dol Halim, but of course she doesn't know all the facts of what happened. Dol Halim tells her basically, after I complete my mission here, you can kill me. So, but after they leave her behind, there's a quick scene where the red woman appears and basically, possesses the Faria girl. So eventually you learn about a place called the Forbidden Zone, which might have some more information about, what's going on with Rena. So you go in there, you get ambushed by Faria, who summons some kind of big Zoogle thing. What is this? The Tormented Limbs? Is that what that part is?
Yeah, that's the Tormented Limbs. So you through the whole Forbidden Zone is where you learn about the experimentation on Danans. You learn about the like what's happened with some stuff. We'll talk about in the next section about the really big twist on things. But it's all about what they're doing and what the Sovereign's all about. And they were trying to recreate, the Sovereign. Basically they were just trying to produce it so no Renans have to be the Sovereign. It's all Danan people. So that's really about it.
So after this, you do fight the Red Woman, and it turns out that there are many Red Women. And they turn into like these red, almost like crystal looking alien creatures that are like pretty tall. And we'll learn more about what they actually are here shortly. But you do defeat all the Red Women. And also, isn't this where you meet Voron again? Or is that a little later?
Yeah, because right after that, because he's chained up. By all four limbs.
That's right, by the Red Women.
Yeah.
Because they're doing something to them.
So, right, he's chained up and he's still like threatening us. But then after we defeat the Red Women, doesn't he do something to like cause the ground to collapse?
Yes. He pulls one hand free, I remember. And then it kind of looks like he's dying and he does make like the bridge collapse. Of course, there's a dramatic moment where Shion almost doesn't make it, but Alfin like grabs her hand as she falls. Of course. Of course, Volron's going nuts and you get the heck out of there. So that brings us on to the next section.
All right. So we now know that we've got to get to Rena. So I forget how, but how we get warped to like a spaceship or a satellite, don't we?
So there's a ship that you're on or whatever. I think it's the same ship you traveled to.
That we took.
Yeah, it basically autopiloted the system got overpowered and autopiloted to a nearby satellite off in the distance away from Rena and away from Dana.
That's and right.
You
that's
get
right.
a big visual of what Rena actually looks like.
That's right.
This is the part because where like Rena kind of blooms, right?
Yeah, because we're on the opposite side of the planet now and you can see where the backside of the planet's completely different than what we thought.
Yeah.
And they use Linigus as like a satellite to start like just draining energy from Dana, like in mass right. quantities.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in the ship, now that we see what's happening with Rena, we come up across this. I don't want to say he was like an alien, but Heverick 35. He is this non-human creature that they keep in like this clear case almost. I guess that's keeping him alive. Well, Heverick 35 just absolutely just dumps information on us. This is the part of the game where you basically learn about everything that has happened. Heverick 35 is kind of like the plot device to give us the full history and tell us everything that's happening, what's going to happen.
Helganquil, which is what all the Red Women are.
That's right.
Which are the original inhabitants of Rena.
Yeah, and they are the inhabitants of Rena.
Yes.
So they were.
All the Renans are actually just Danans that they took from the planet, apparently.
That's right. So anyway, he's telling us about all of the energy being drained and how it's going to kill all the life on the planet. But he tells us, and Rich, I'm going to have to lean on you here. He tells us if we do something that it'll stop, but we refuse to do it. He's like trying to make us a deal, but we don't want to take his deal. Do you remember that kind of back and forth?
Oh, I'm trying to think what it is.
Shion will die for some reason if they do his
plan. That's right. That's right.
You have to let the thorns unleash on the great spirit of Rena, because the great spirit of Rena basically brainwashed the people of Rena to sacrifice, do everything to feed all the energy to the great spirit of Rena. The great spirit of Rena is actually just a parasite in a sense that travels to, is basically figured out that it will merge into Dana, take over Dana, kill Dana, move on to the next one.
And aren't the thorns actually part of the great spirit of Rena?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
how did those get inside Shion? I forget that detail in the first place.
Because I think she was on Linigus.
Oh, right. It was passed down along mm-hmm. her family line because Naori took them on in order to save Alfin, right? From the
Because Naori's the one that put Alfin in the like ship and launched him.
Right, to save his life.
Right.
She promised she would.
Right. Okay, so yeah, that was the deal. He tells us that there's one way to do it, but it's going to cost Shion's life. We say that there's got to be another way. We do the whole back and forth. So anyway, we decide that we're going to head to Rena anyway, because we got to do this.
There is a part here where you have to talk to every party member and have a long scene about what that party member is thinking.
Of course.
And of course, Alfin and Shion have a heart-to-heart here. Heverick 35 tells him he's not going to let them leave if they don't do the plan, but then they convince him anyway, somehow, that I'm not remembering.
Yeah, I don't remember how, but...
It's because it's the will of Dana. They carry the will of Dana in every single life that will propel them to defeat the great spirit of Rena. That's what I remember correctly on that one, is you know, with the power of friendship and the power of life will triumph against that. That's generally the whole theme of it, I believe.
That sounds right.
Sounds right. Yeah, that sounds about right. All right. So we go to back to the spaceship and we're getting ready to launch. This is, like Scott said, where you have to talk to everybody and, you know, kind of fill them out. So anyway, we're going to head to Rena, and it's basically a land of nothing. You get there and it's like you're just on two rock platforms and you can see the astral energy being drained. But other than that, there's nothing.
It kind of reminded me of Valhalla from 13-2.
Actually, yeah, I could see that.
And also the end of the world.
Just no buildings.
Yeah.
So, but there is like a couple of warp points that you can deal with, and then they look like round mirrors almost. So you can do that, and this is where you have to go, and it's like a maze, right? Where you have to remember if you go right, if you go left, and because you can get turned around pretty easily because all the rooms look identical.
I don't think I got turned around. I remember just following the check the map stuff on it.
I got turned around a couple times because all of the rooms looked identical.
Yeah, it does look identical and stuff. That is true. I can't remember if it's a maze or not, so it should be fine.
Rich has a better sense of direction than you.
Apparently so, because I struggled a little bit. I was like, Scott, get a map, help me.
Oh yeah, I did have to look up a map for you. I remember
that now. Because I could not figure it out for some reason. I was really struggling. So anyway, you go through this and then you get into a battle. Oh god, I'm gonna butcher this. Valclinimus?
That was pretty good.
Yeah, it's just a beast that lives in there.
Oh, that's right. I remember him. I was overpowered by this point, so he wasn't too bad for me. So you go through this area, you keep warping and fighting enemies and whatnot. And finally you get towards the end here, and we run into the Great Spirit. So once you fight that one beast, you start a chain of battles.
Yep.
This was actually a pretty epic part of the game because it's just battle, 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 battle.
If you're like us, though, right before you go into this, you take the mirror back to Dana and do every side quest before.
Yep, which is exactly what we did. So you take the final mirror, the final little teleport, and then you meet the Great Spirit, and then there's a giant battle against the Great Spirit, and then you win that battle. But then I don't remember this next battle, the Subsummer.
It's basically you fight the Great Spirit, and as you defeat him using the power of Dana's spirit and everything else and whatnot, this is the second form of the Great Spirit, but in a smaller form, in a sense. This is the Great Spirit of Rena. This is the final piece of it.
Gotcha.
So this is your final boss.
This is your goal.
Yep.
All right, so you do that battle, and then lo and behold, our good buddy shows up again.
I know
Valron. Yep.
He runs in with a ship that he stole off Linnegus, and he doesn't land it. He crashes it.
And he just wham.
So I think how it goes down is, you know, they defeat the spirit. They get the Rennis Alma back. They begin trying to seal the spirit in the Rennis Alma. And that's when Valron shows up and steals it, basically.
Right, because we were doing the what's it called? The ceremony. The spirit channel ceremony or something like that. I can't remember, and that's when he showed up.
Right.
So we get into a big, giant, epic battle with him.
Isn't it one-on-one between Alphen and Valron?
Yeah, it's just Alphen and Valron.
Isn't Xion's stuck somewhere too?
She's like trying to take in the Great Spirit into herself at this point. Yep. I remember right.
Right. Right. So Alphen is battling Valron, and he just will not concede. So what happens though is instead he blows himself up. And by doing that, he destroys the Rennis Alma because he had that with him. So it's kind of a, if I can't have it, nobody can. So he just blows himself up and destroys the Rennis Alma. So once that has happened, Xion shows back up, and she asks Alfin basically to kill her so that it'll destroy the Great Spirit. But Alfin figures out instead that he's going to ask the Great Spirit of Dana for help. And together they can stop the destruction of both planets if they kind of like make them into one single world. And it'll save Shion because it'll get rid of her of the thorns. So they figure all of that out, and then we get our nice little bow on top of our story.
What do you guys think of that, like, solution to everything? It felt a little Deus Ex Machina.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, it's more of like the good swallows the bad.
Right.
That's what it is. The Great Spirit, everybody channeled their Dana spirit. Everyone channeled it into one single focus, and the whole planet did that, which then overpowered Rena's spirit because it was so weak anyways.
Right.
I liked it.
It was foreshadowed, to be fair. They do talk about trying to get the Great Spirit of Dana's help a couple times.
Yeah.
I mean, Renwell mentioned it several times throughout the game, I believe. I think it was Renwell.
And
yeah, because she communicates, the mages do have like a connection with the Great Spirit.
Yeah, like they can hear them and like speak with them. Mm-hmm.
And the two planets merging reminded me of Final Fantasy IX, by the way, because, you know, the Terra and Gaia were originally one and all that. So. Okay, what's the ending then?
The ending, a little bit after this battle, we learn that Alfin and Shion, they get married. And now they're, you know, everybody's living a nice life with Danans and Renans all living in harmony together. And I just wish they would have went a little bit further and just let, like, show us that Law and Renwell are dating. Show us that Dohalim and Kisara are together. Because, damn it, you shadowed it the entire game and they still didn't just finish that piece off.
I'm okay with not seeing Dohalim and Kisara together, but Law and Renwell, where they spent so much time on the will they or won't they with them,
yeah.
And then to not get like some kind of solution to that. I know you see his arm around her like at the end, I think, but yeah, that's not enough.
No, especially as much time as they spent like focusing on Law and Renwell and how they built them up. You could tell it definitely was not like a brother-sister relationship.
I think it's a weak ending because it's... Yeah. You spend hours of the characters just talking about what they're going to do after and just going back and forth with each other. And then you get like a 2-minute ending that's like, and then they lived happily ever after. And that's basically it.
What I would have loved is you see the people of Dana beating the shit out of people of Dana.
That would be
great. Sons of bitches.
That would be, he's like, okay, you made us live for thousands of years as slaves. Your turn. So, then you have to go back. It's like, well, we're all the same people. I'm like, no, 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 no. Later on down the road, we'll be the same people. But right now, you're going to do my laundry.
But for right now, payback's a bitch.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get that. I mean, that's a good ending that they had. I thought it was good. I got a little, you know, misty eyed a little bit seeing Shion and Alfin finally get together. You know, there's some little clip at the end of it is all the characters are back on Dana. And all of a sudden, Shion and Alfin appear in front of them because the Great Spirit transported them back down there. So that was kind of a nice little, like, oh my God, they survived, because it was like everything was going to blow up. They were going to die down there, supposedly. That was what was going to happen. But it was good.
There was one moment of the ending that I did really like. And it's like after Shion loses her thorns, she holds Renwell's hand, which...
Oh, yeah, that was really sweet.
Because Shion says a couple different times during the game, I wish I could hold your hand to Renwell or something like that. So that was easily like a moment they could have just not even acknowledged that they did. So I like that.
Agreed.
So overall thoughts on the story then? What do we think, guys?
I thought it was phenomenal. I loved it. It was one that I could definitely see why it won RPG of the Year. In the Game Awards last year. It was just, I'm excited for the next entries of the Tales game. I feel like the Tales series is going to continue to grow. It's good. I enjoy the crap out of it.
What about you, Corey?
I'll talk a little bit more about it in the ratings, but overall, I really enjoyed it. I think this being my first Tales game, I couldn't have asked for more from this game.
Okay. I think it does. There's something to be said for it being pretty anime tropey at some points, colored by numbers, but I myself did really enjoy the story as well. My only complaints really are the ending, and the Linnegus Rena section can get a little wordy and paced badly, I think.
It was too long.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You remember, Corey, it was like two or three. We had like one session of just talking to people at one point.
Oh, yeah. For I think we played for about 3 hours straight where it was just dialogue.
And then after that, it was like nothing but battles for a couple hours. Like, could they have like speeded out a little bit?
We did talk. I remember after that session of just a bunch of dialogues and then a bunch of battles, I remember telling you, I was like, I wish they would have like combined these two sections a little bit better.
Yeah. I will say, I think that the story, its strength is the characters. I think the core cast are really interesting and likable characters, and they kind of carry what may have otherwise been like maybe not kind of a vanilla story. You get really invested because you like the characters so much, I think.
Agreed.
But yeah, we still got gameplay to talk about. So you guys ready to move on to that?
Yeah.
Let's go. So I told these boys before we started recording the episode that I didn't play the game. All I did was fishing. So I think I maybe did like two battles myself. I can't remember why I did it. But so I'm going to be leaning on these guys to talk about the gameplay. So you're up first, Corey.
All right. So Tales of Arise uses the same gameplay function as the last several entries of this series. Where the game really shines is its ability to swap back and forth from a 3D animation to 2D in its various dialogue scenes. Those are the game's way to like include more backstory and information for the characters and for the story that's happening. So basically what would happen is you would see a little cutscene, and then you would get a prompt to hit your R1 button, and then it would go into like a comic book almost way of telling the story, which I thought was really cool. Tales of Arise brings its game when it comes to combat and the overworld. So the player controls Alphen on the map with monsters just kind of roaming around, and then it seamlessly transitions to battle if the player chooses to fight. So that's another great thing, is you can actually see the enemies on the field and you can choose to run up to them and fight them, or you can run away. Various items are available to collect on the map, which can be used for crafting, smithing, cooking, fishing, all of that fun stuff. These are all over the place to find, and they're generally pretty easy to spot.
Yep. And it's worth mentioning, though, that those dialogue scenes, there is a trophy for like seeing all 300 of them. But there is a way at the campfires where you can go back and view scenes that you missed. So yes,
you can handy. Reminisce.
That is pretty nice.
So that's like the non-combat of the game. So what do you guys think about like just the out of combat stuff?
I mean, easy to play. Like I said, yeah. you can see the villains, you can see the items. The map is pretty nice. I like being able to switch between characters. Yeah, it's good.
Do you have to be Alphen outside of battle? I can't remember.
No.
Okay.
No, yeah, you can
control whoever.
Yeah.
Corey was Alphen the entire time. I think he switched to Law during one battle because he was having trouble with a boss, and all the gods are like, use Law. But
yeah, there was one battle I played as Law, and there was one battle I played as Kisara. But other than that, I was Alphen.
Yeah. So other than the actual exploration, there are a few side things to do, such as fishing. The fishing is a little wonky and weird to get used to at first, but once you figure it out, it's pretty intuitive. I like it better than, like, say, Final Fantasy XV's fishing. There's also one thing that you got to do, though, is you, like, got to upgrade your rods and your bait that you get from catching certain fish. Once you do that, it becomes child's play. There's also cooking. It's very similar to cooking in 15. You get timed bonuses to your stats or drop rates, things like that, based on the meal that you eat with all the items that you find around. New recipe.
And some of those abilities that you get from cooking actually come very handy.
Yeah, they can be the difference between, you know, winning a boss battle and getting crushed. So
yeah, my favorite one was I always tried to cook something that gave me an experience boost.
Oh yeah, that's good. There's also special monster battles you can do. Most of the areas have some kind of large optional Zoogle boss you can do. Of course, at the beginning of the game, you have to come back to most of those. But later, once you're OP, it's not that bad. Let's see. What else we got here? There are side quests that you can do all over the map. There's a ton of them. There's some running side quests like the gourmand who travels the world that you got to like find certain recipes for. There's like the Wonder Bard where I forget what his deal was, but he has like a line of quests as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I should mention this before I forget. In the post game, you can go back and go to these bonus dungeons that are actual areas from past Tales games. And there's even a couple characters that shows up from past Tales games as super bosses. So that was pretty cool. Of course, it didn't really do much for Corey and I as not being familiar with the characters, but what are you going to do?
They were hard battles too.
Yeah. The hardest battle in the game was there's a gauntlet you can do in Linnegus, or maybe it's the Hevrek ship, where you go back and refight harder versions of each lord, but then one of the battles in there is you fight all of the lords at once, and that was probably the hardest battle in the game.
Oh my god, that took me forever.
They wanted to give up, and I wouldn't let him. And then you even fight Zephyr, a Phantom Zephyr after that, and then that gives Law and Zephyr a little bit of closure after that scene, so that's nice. But yeah, that's really all that I can think of. You can, oh yeah, you can farm, as Law would say. You think we should go check in on the animals?
Every like fucking time.
He likes them.
Yeah.
Apparently so. That was Law's highlight, was that we got a farm.
What do you do? I never paid attention to like the actual benefit that gives you.
It just gives you like whatever animal you decide to raise. Once they're done, you get ingredients for cooking, like you would get meat or chicken or pork or whatever.
You kill them.
Yeah. This looks like a good spot to find some ingredients.
It's a Kingdom Hearts 3 reference.
I'll get there one day.
Yeah. So that's the side shit. And then we left the meat and potatoes of the game, the combat, to Rich.
Yes. All right. So again, like we said, the combat is where the game really shines. A lot of people love the combat. You control one character at a time, but it's very fast paced as you can dip, duck, dodge some more. As enemies come flying at you, because it's that linear blur, like the linear battle system, where it's you're consistently moving and running and doing attacks and stuff. You have to pay attention. You have to really pay attention to what's going on, because you can get overwhelmed and you can, you know, die very easily if you're not staying on top of everything. Staggering and blindsiding an enemy is key to winning, including the bosses. Did you guys figure out staggering pretty easily?
That's a Corey question.
I'm sitting here trying to remember if I always tried to go for the stack, because eventually, like later on in the game, I got to where I didn't have to really worry about it too much. Because, I mean, like I said, what we were doing, like, every single side quest, and the combat was fun enough where I didn't skip enemies. I always went in to fight them. But I don't remember much about focusing on the staggering part. But the blindsiding, I do remember for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because it does matter where you're striking them from, because the sides and the back does offer a little bit of a boost to it. So that's, you've got to be able to do those. Now, there are abilities such as arts that each character does do that you set up with Alphen. There's different abilities that will go based on button combos, using your normal sword versus the blazing sword. However, with the blazing sword, if you use it, it will drain your health. So you got to be careful with that. If you hold the blazing sword for a long period of time to charge up an attack, it does increase the damage of it. However, it leaves you vulnerable to be killed very quickly if you're not careful with that. That's why it's key to have a person healing you on the back end. So that is handy. Now,
speaking of which, what kind of setup did you go for? I'm curious, because I always played as Alphen.
Yeah.
And then I kept Shion in my party because she was a healer. And then I had Dohalim in my party because he could also heal, but he was also able to use other arts. And then for my fourth one, I kept Law in there because he would just like run at it and just do physical damage constantly.
I use Alphen, Shion, Kisara, and Law.
Okay. So only one difference.
Yeah. I did not like Dohalim stuff, and I really didn't rely heavily on Renuel stuff. I just enjoyed using that combo.
How was Kisara in battle?
She's like a tank. She took a lot of the damage. She was able to do some things. She also healed various things like that too. So that kind of helped it. But she took a lot of the brunt while Law did a lot of the quick hit successions. Shion was handling stuff in the back end. And then I was just in the middle in between.
Okay.
So it's good to have like good formation. So
a lot of the guides that I was reading for like the super bosses though did recommend using Shion and Dohalim just because like having that extra healing was so important for those super boss battles.
Yeah. So once you're done with that, you know, doing all this fast paced arts and whatnot, you can have the ability to do the boost strike, which is basically staggering in a sense, creates these massive damage producers. Where it can actually end the battle completely because it's so overwhelming. So I really enjoyed Shion and Law's.
Those are the two that I always got used, was especially Law. For some reason, I don't know why, but in my party, Law, he would be able to do this crazily fast.
Yep.
Like it was almost every battle with him.
I never really understood the system as to like what got people aggroed so much that they did those attacks, because like Corey was saying, Law was constant. Tenebrous Claw. And then we like barely ever saw the other characters.
You could also equip items that would make it go faster. And one thing, because I don't know, Scott, if you'll remember this or not. I know Rich will know what I'm talking about. But for each ability, like this bracelet, you can attach like four levels of enhancement. So like one bracelet can have the effect of like upping your penetration, your defense, your attack, and then one other thing. Well, the equipment I had on Law, one of the things was that his boost strike would gain faster.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize it was going to be that fast.
That's probably why then. Okay.
But it was some good stuff. Like they, you know, those attacks were really over the top, you know, amazing detail with the Unreal 5 or Unreal 4 engine. It was just really cool.
Yeah, they look amazing.
Healing arts are some of the things I didn't like using CP. Of course, CP you can gain more as time goes on and whatnot. But yeah, that was kind of annoying when those run out. I don't know if you had any problem with that.
I early on in the game, it was a major headache because I kept Shion in battle, and you remember how you could set your battle strategy to like different paradigms?
Yeah.
I put them to focus on healing if you die, you die.
Yeah.
So I put them to focus on healing, but Shion would just run through that CP. So yeah. I always had to keep like, what was it? The pineapple gels that you could buy. I had to make sure I like kept those in stock.
But yeah, that's really all the combat is just some big flashy hit magic, heal, done.
And it's so fast paced, it's fun.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like I said, I didn't really play it, but watching Corey, it is a very like entertaining battle system, I would say.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I think it's really cool that you can play as any of the characters. I know you guys didn't really do that. I feel like if I had, though, I would have. I would have mixed it up some.
That is one thing I do regret about my playthrough is that, I wish I would have played as the other characters a little bit more. And I also wish I would have maybe swapped out my battle team a little bit just to see what Rinwell and Kisara were like in battle. Those are the two things I probably wish I would have done more of.
And I'm not sure if you mentioned this or not, Rich, but another thing I really like is how even though it's you have six characters and it's a four party battle, you can still like call in the other characters almost like quick summon attacks.
Oh yes, that's right. There, mm-hmm. there's those abilities. You can do that.
So
it's limited, but
yeah, but it does feel like the whole party's there instead of like some kind of weird, like they're not in this battle for some reason. But yeah, so moving on from the combat, there are some typical RPG tropes. There's towns, there's inns, shops, all that normal stuff. One thing we didn't really go over, there is a skill tree in this game where you have to, basically you unlock different branches of it based on completing certain story goals or side quests. How did you guys feel about the skill tree system in this?
It was okay. I mean, it's the normal RPG skill tree system. It wasn't like fancy stuff that, you know, you had to really dig and make a huge amounts of decisions on, life-changing decisions. I still thought it was fine.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. And I liked that it was a little different in that, like, it wasn't all like battle related stuff. Cause like one of them for Kisara, like three of her skill rings were catch a certain fish.
Yeah.
One thing about the campfires I forgot to mention also is that you can, before you go to sleep, you can choose to talk to certain characters, and that increases like Alfin's relationship with them, and you get more story scenes that kind of explain that character's motivations as you get further down those lines. Unfortunately, for some reason, Corey hated Kisara and never did her scenes. And so getting everybody's relationship to max is a trophy. And so the way it works is a new scene only unlocks once every hour of actual gameplay. And so this was the very last thing we did for the platinum, is I just let the game run for an hour to get to Kisara's next scene, and then let it run for another hour to get to Kisara's next scene. So,
that's funny.
As far as DLC goes, they made a big deal. I remember this being a news story. I remember Atlas made a big deal that Tales of Arise was a complete game. There's no story DLC. There won't be any expansions. So the only DLC that there is there is a paid costume DLC. And then you could also buy kind of like booster packs that will do things like give you some money or increase your experience multiplier permanently. So it's kind of like a little boost you can get to make the game a little easier. I did. Now, this is where you get the shame. You get shamed, Corey, because I did buy this for him because he was really raging against Ganabelt.
No, it was Dohalim.
Oh, yeah, Dohalim. What about
it was
you,
Dohalim.
Rich?
I'm raising my hand because I did it too.
Shame.
What?
Shame.
I only did one of them. I didn't do all of them. I just did one.
I did all of them.
Oh, see, I did not. Hey, it's just there. It's there. It's tempting me.
That battle with Dohalim, okay, I was a higher level than he was, and no joke, I fought him multiple times and just was getting just wiped across the floor by this guy. I could not figure him out. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm not going to sit here and grind for days upon days.
You don't have to. You just have to grind your credit card.
That's exactly what we did.
I mean, you know what? It's fine. Like, the thing is, though, that changes your levels and it gives you a few extra, like, added things such as money and whatnot. That's fine. That doesn't change anything too drastic. It's not DLC in a sense. It's just like, hey, give me a boost real fast.
Those early Lord battles are tough from what
they're hard.
Yeah. So I think
you have to be on top of it.
I think especially the experience multipliers, once you add that in, the game becomes significantly easier after a little bit, because you start to overcome the curve, the level curve of the enemies.
But it didn't make it to where, like, it didn't make it to where that it was so easy that it wasn't fun. There were still times I still died.
Yeah.
Because battles were still hard.
Yeah.
I think if you didn't do that, I think the level of difficulty does jump in a certain spot of the game, and you're not on par with that no matter what. So I think maybe they did it on purpose. It's like, hey, you have to buy this. You're not going to be where you need to be.
Well, right after we bought it, I still had to fight Dolhaline multiple times to beat him. It wasn't like I bought it and then went in and like crushed him. I still died multiple times.
Right.
But at least I was getting further into the battle instead of like immediately just get annihilated.
Yeah. So that's the gameplay. And I think that there might be a couple of aspects that we're forgetting, but before we move on, are there any like bosses or dungeons in particular that are very memorable for you, or parts of the game that you want to call out?
The first battle with Dolhaline, that was the first battle that really I just could not overcome.
You got really frustrated with Ganabelt too, though. I remember you lowered the
difficulty. That one was hard. I mean, they make the bosses not easy, but I mean, that's also like a good thing, because then you're not like bored. You're actually having to like think about what you're doing in battle. And that post game battle with all of the lords again, that one was challenging.
Yeah. What about you, Rich?
No, everything was, you know, pretty good. I enjoyed the hell out of it. So all of its highs for me on a lot of the boss battles, the motivations of the characters, the just good is programmed. There was no bugs in anything. I didn't run across any issues. I thought it was a great to have a game that was complete out of the gate.
And they made all six characters likable.
Yes.
Yeah. The only one I would say I like her, but I didn't love her. I thought Kasara could have used a little bit more fleshing out.
She was the mom.
Yeah, the group mom, basically.
Yes.
As far as dungeons go, I know, what was it, Delpharis Castle that we struggled with?
I don't remember struggling too much with that one.
There was one castle where we had to like pull up a map and we got really confused.
Oh, yeah. That's
I remember you got mad at me because I wasn't helping enough.
I was like, Scott, I am confused. I don't know where I'm at. Help me.
I was like, I don't know where you're at either. Okay. Well, in that case, any final thoughts on the gameplay before we move on?
Nope.
All right.
It's pretty epic.
So we're going to take a quick break here, but when we return, we will finally give our ratings for Tales of Arise.
Are you nostalgic for a simpler time?
A time where controllers didn't have so many buttons.
A time where games weren't so overly complicated by so many plot devices.
Yeah.
Me too. I miss my NES.
Hi, I'm Bill, and I absolutely love old video games. But I didn't have anyone to play with. So I decided to start the Super Switch Club. That's right, a podcast dedicated to discussing and reliving the nostalgia of retro video games that are also on the Nintendo Online Virtual Library. Each week, my friends and I will discuss games from the NES to the SNES. Games like
Super Mario World,
Kirby's Dream Land 3,
Donkey Kong Country,
The Legend of Zelda,
Super Metroid,
Balloon Fight,
Punch-Out,
A Link to the Past,
F-Zero,
and so much more.
The Super Switch Club is a podcasters assemble style show from the We Can Make This Work, probably, podcast network, where we will be replaying and discussing some of our favorite video games from our childhood.
So join us on the Super Switch Club, where you can relive the nostalgia of tearing your hair out over an NES game that loves to troll the shit out of you.
Best of all, you can too.
Head on over to probablywork.com/SuperSwitchClub now to learn more.
Okay, we are back and we are ready to rate this bad boy.
Thank you.
That was the start of Alfin's theme. I wish my real life had a theme song that epic. But okay, so our categories today are story, combat, non-combat, visuals, audio, overall feel, and then our bonus category, final boss, which does not count towards the final score. It's just a fun rating we give. Since I did not actually play the game other than the fishing, we're only going to count Corey's and Rich's ratings today, but I will still give my ratings because I did watch him play the whole game. But my ratings will not count towards the final score. Sad. But we'll kick it off with story. What'd you think, Corey?
Okay, so overall story, fantastic. I love the overall story. I do wish, however, there are a couple parts that don't quite sit well with me. And we've kind of already briefly touched on them. At the ending, I wish we would have got a little bit more from some of the other characters. For instance, Law and Renwell. I really wish we would have got a little bit of a better ending from there. Not necessarily better, but just more fleshed out. I do like, though, you also get like a little closure between Law and his dad. I thought that was a really nice touch. Some of the pacing, especially towards the back half of the game, really gets thrown off. I wish they wouldn't have done it to where it was just hours of dialogue and then hours of battle. I wish they would have blended that a little bit better. But story overall, for me, I'm going to go 8 because it's a great story. I just wish it would have been handled slightly better.
Okay. What about you, Rich?
It's a good point that you have there, Corey. So I'm going to dock it a point on the pacing of the story for sure on the back end of the game, because it felt like, you know, the first 5 areas that we talked about in part 1 of the review, you know, that was a huge, huge area. Well, and then you get to part 2 where they have that break in, or that break where the month-long gap. And then after that, it was just consistent amounts of just dump after dump of information, and just pacing was off. Other than that, I love the story. I'm going to give it a 9.
Okay. Corey took the words pretty much right out of my mouth. Like if I had gone first, I would have just said what he said. I think it's an 8. Again, I think the strength of this story is the characters, not necessarily the actual story. There is some anime tropiness in there, but I did really care about the characters. I cared about what was going on, and I was really intrigued and invested despite, you know, not playing it myself. All right, combat. Start us off, Corey.
For me, easy. This is a 10. The combat in this game is just so much fun. At first, yes, there's a lot of elements that go into combat because you can get overwhelmed because there's so many different things and aspects of the combat, but they do such a good job of getting you comfortable with all of those really quickly. So once you get the hang of it, it becomes just a fun experience. And this game, it's one of those rare times where I didn't want to miss any battles. Like, if I got the chance to go into battle, I did it because I didn't mind it because it was fun.
Okay. What about you, Rich?
10. I mean, it is just fun nonstop. Like, every battle I'd go into, I would rush to the boost strike. I would try to do as many boost strikes as I possibly can because I just love the animations and love how that went. Skills and the arts, each character, just the banter they had back and forth in the combat was just fun. 10.
Yep. I'll give it a 10 as well. You know, I don't really have much experience with the combat system myself, but it looked fun, and I trust what you guys said. The only thing that I guess I can say against it is, you know, you get into some of these boss battles who have 40 kabillion HP, and it really seems like you're doing chip damage. And so it could get a little boring to watch at times from my end.
That's when you got to go for the boost strikes and that's when you got to have strategy on that one. And that's what made it fun.
Yeah.
I can't remember if we said this last episode, but I remember when you fight Doa Lee and he has, you know, 28 million HP or whatever it is. I already knew that he was going to join the party. So I was like, he better still have freaking 28 million HP when he joins us.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
He did not.
But anyway, yeah, it's a 10 from me as well. Non-combat, Corey.
I mean, there's nothing really wrong with it. I mean, you've got the inns and the shops, and the world is pretty, and you can see the enemies before you go into battle. You have the campfire scenes where you can build the relationships. However, I will dock it a point because I feel like a lot of times those little scenes, I don't know what you want to call them, but the little scenes that would pop up for you to hit R1 and it would play the little comic strip scenes. I feel like a lot of times they just dumped so many of those on you. Like, so right after you rest from a campfire, you would get that notification like 5 times. So you're sitting there, and a lot of times, like, what it's referring to has like happened like a way back. So, and they would jump a little bit. So it was kind of out of, you know, out of order, out of sequence. But honestly, that's the only really thing I can come up to dock it. So I'll give it a 9.
Okay. What about you, Rich?
I have no issues with it. The non-combat stuff, all of it's smooth, runs very nicely together. I am going to dock it a point because of fishing.
Good
doesn't
point.
Matter if it's got good fishing point. just 1 point's gone, boom, gone. So well, other than that, it was
I don't
good.
Think there's a photo mode though, so at least there's that for you.
That's why I didn't get docked another point.
Okay, you know, there's nothing wrong really with the non-combat from what I could tell. It's almost a little dry, but all the usual suspects are here with, you know, mini games and towns and shopping and all of that. But I also don't think there was anything like particularly cool about it because it's not open world. It's pretty linear. So I'll give it an 8. Okay, visuals. Corey.
Visuals. This is a 10. This game is absolutely beautiful. All of the worlds and the maps, I never once, you know, saw any loading errors or glitches or anything. It's just they did a great job of making each landscape feel unique and different, and they all look great. But then also the visuals of combat, like we've talked about combat so much because that's where this game lives, but like all of those over boost strikes and all of the animations that go into it, they're all just gorgeous.
Okay, Rich?
I'm going to mirror the same thing Corey said. It's a 10. It's just, you know, I do love the art style and how they brought to life every single area, you know, difference of, you know, Olzebeck, Cislodia, you know, all those places look phenomenal. And I do have to say, you brought up a good point on something, Scott, a moment ago. It's not open world. It's linear. I wish they would go back to this style of RPGs.
Yeah.
So now, it's just,
I will say it's not like Final Fantasy 13 or even Final Fantasy 10 linear. There are branching paths. The maps do kind of like spread off a little bit,
which is fine. Dungeons.
Yeah. So I wouldn't dock points for linearity from my end.
Yeah.
As far as the visuals, from what I could tell, it is a very pretty game. I want to give it an 8, but I think I'm going to be a little bit nicer and say a 9. The thing I want to dock it for is, I know Corey said he likes them, but the comic book style scenes, if it's like the non-fully animated scenes, they do a good job with them, better than other games that do this. But to me, that always screams, we had a budget. So if those scenes were mostly fully animated, then I would have given it a 10. But that's it.
I get where you're coming from on that, but that is a Tales trope all the way from like various older games that they've kept in there.
Hey,
so,
this was supposed to be a revival.
I know. Okay,
arise,
okay, fair enough.
Arise from the tropes. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, if that is the fact and that's a carryover from prior games, I can see why like a Tales fanatic would be like, I'm so glad they kept that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, and also there's, for the really important moments, you do get the occasional anime scene. So that's cool too.
Right. And anime scenes were fucking awesome.
Yes. Okay, audio.
Audio, 10. Music is fantastic. The voice acting is on point. you never once get some like cheesy line where it just feels out of place. Everything just blended together so perfect. The sounds during the game, during combat, the banter that they have, I have absolutely no issues with it, and I thought they did a fantastic job.
I feel like our friend Angry Ass Black Dude is like rolling over right now.
Does he not like them?
He says he hates the combat because the characters are constantly screaming and yelling and saying the same things over and over and over.
I get that. I get that. Audio, I'm going to measure, or I'm going to match the same thing as what Corey said. It's, you know, everything blended very nicely. Even the themes of each area was good. I do have that same thought of some of these things that they would say during combat does get a little annoying. Same with some of the random stuff they say around the world when you travel, like in the open areas. But it's not enough to dock it down. So I'm still giving it a 10.
Yeah, I mean, like Law constantly saying, maybe we should check on the animals. It gets annoying, but it's not enough to say that it makes it, you know, less great.
Yep.
What is it that they say whenever you, like, warp to a campfire? And there's always, like, the same line that they use, like, oh, that was a long journey or something
like
that.
Yeah, there's like, three different lines that'll come up. Or like, Shion would say, we finally made it.
There's some repetitive ones in there for sure. Okay, so audio, I will give it an 8. I think the voice acting is on point. I really think the voice actors did a good job. I will say though that I think Kisara could have used a little work. I thought a lot of her lines sounded very flat, or like the voice actor, you can tell she's not the same caliber as the rest of the cast. But she is also the one with the least credit, so she's new to the scene, apparently. And then also, I wasn't as much of a fan of the soundtrack as you guys were. There's some really good tracks. I love the vocal themes. But when I was gathering the music for this, like, I couldn't think of any. I had a hard time coming up with, okay, what are 6 or 7 tracks that I remember? So I think it's a good soundtrack, but I don't think it's a 10, personally. Okay, overall feel, Corey?
I'm going to go with a 9. Overall, I really, really liked this game. I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I had a lot of fun playing this game. I'm glad we actually took the time to play it. Not just for this review, but just because that was just a fun game to play. And, I mentioned this is my first Tales game. And this game was so good that now any Tales game that comes out, I'm going to play it. And I also want to kind of go back and see some older Tales games too. But this game overall is phenomenal.
I smell some more reviews. Because I do need to go back and actually play, finish out Vesperia and Zestria and Berseria.
So yeah, somebody in Discord actually gave me a recommendation for a next one, too. I can't remember which one it was, though.
So. We need to play that. So, anyways, back to mine. Overall feel, I'm going to give it a 9. Now, I'm going to get half a point docking because of fishing. Just throw that out there. But
I really hate the fishing, huh?
I swear to God, I love fishing in real life, but I just can't say it in games. I'm also going to get a half a point dock because of the pacing at the end of the game. Like we said, it's like a lot of it is a common thing that we see a lot of RPGs that tend to, towards the end of the game, just give you a crap ton of info dump at the end to kind of fill in the back stuff, which I do find kind of annoying. But I get why they do it. But then the other side of it's like, stop it. So I'm going to give it 9.
Okay. For myself, you know, I really like this game. It may sound like I'm being negative about it, but my scores are still pretty dang good. So I'm giving it an 8, the overall feel. Like I said, I really liked the story. The combat looked like it was fantastic. There's just some parts I wish were a little bit more polished and could have been done a little better, especially the biggest thing I think is the pacing in the back half of the game, like we keep bringing up. But yeah, that's it for me. final boss, which would be the final one-on-one encounter between Alphen and Volron.
I feel like this one is actually going to be a little bit lower, because I feel like it's one of those battles that, like, you can't lose kind of deal. And it's not, like, extremely memorable compared to some of the other parts of the game. I'll give it a 7. I mean, it's not bad. It does a cool, like, it still looks cool. It's just not as great as some of the prior battles.
You were also OP at this point, so it almost was a little anticlimactic.
Yeah, so maybe I was just too OP, and it took some of the challenge out of it.
What about you, Rich?
I'm going to give it an 8. Some of the reasons why I have on this is because the motivation for Volron was just, I didn't really like it. The whole time, Volron has this huge hard-on for Alphen because he's supposed to be the next sovereign, whereas Volron's supposed to be the sovereign. So he is just gunning for him the entire time without any real motivation. As we see some of these bosses are like, you know, there's reasons behind it. The only thing that Volron has against Alphen is the fact that he's the other sovereign, and he does not like him. He just wants to kill him. So there's that. So I'm going to give it an 8. I mean, it was kind of a nice deal at the end of it to finally, like, okay, you're done, buddy. I'm tired of you. I'm just going to kill you. You're done. And then you try to kill him and he just commits suicide.
Damn it, Volron.
Yeah.
we didn't really talk about this, but I do think one thing the story lacks is a compelling villain. Because you do get, like, the villain of the day earlier in the story with each lord. And some of them are, like, you know, very easy to hate. But I don't think Volron's a particularly comparing main antagonist. So I'll give it a 7. I also didn't like that it was just Alphen versus Volron. I kind of thought I wished all the characters could have still participated. But I get why they did it. I guess they were probably going for, like, a Cloud versus Sephiroth moment. But, yeah. Nothing really to write home about here for me. All right, and that's all of our scores. Corey, you want to read yours off?
Sure. So for story, I gave it an 8. Combat was a 10. Non-combat was a 9. Visuals were 10. Audio was a 10. And overall feel was a 9, which gives my subtotal a 56 out of 60, or 93%.
Does that feel about right for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Rich?
So I gave story a 9, combat a 10, non-combat a 9, visuals a 10, audio a 10, overall feel 9, and then the subcategory, which is the final boss, of 8, giving me a 57 out of 60, or a 95%, which feels about right for me.
Yeah, I remember you talking about how much you loved this game when you were playing it and when you beat it. You know,
I'm so glad you guys played it. Yeah, I'm so glad you guys brought it. Because I remember telling you this constantly, how much, like you said, I was bragging about it. And I was like, just play it. Just play it. You'll love it. Yeah. So
my scores, which, again, do not count. I gave story an 8, combat a 10, non-combat an 8, visuals a 9, audio an 8, overall feel an 8, final boss a 7. So my subtotal is a 51 out of 60, or an 85%. Which means we have our final score calculated. And so, the RPG After Years gives Tales of Arise a score of 94%.
Nice.
Quite the high rating there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel it deserves it.
I don't know. I'm about to drop a bomb on you guys.
Hold on. Before you do that, let me ask you this question, Scott. If you would have played it, you physically would have played it, and Corey played it separately, do you think your score would have been a little higher? Possibly. Or lower?
I'm not sure, because I gave combat a 10, and I feel like that's the part I really didn't get to experience. And so I don't know that my score would have been much higher if I had been the one playing. Maybe.
Okay.
If we had included my score, our final rating would have been a 91%, by the way.
Yeah.
However, this makes Tales of Arise our new number one, the highest rating we've ever given.
Whoa.
It ties with Super Mario 64, which is not an RPG. So that was a Patreon episode. Below that, we have Final Fantasy VII Remake, Last of Us 1 and 2, Persona 5 Royal, tied for number two now. So yeah.
Wow.
Which all those games got a 92%, by the way. So do you guys think that this game is better than Final Fantasy VII Remake and Persona 5 Royal?
I'm gonna be the person that's gonna say this. Yes. I think it's better than Final Fantasy VII Remake.
For me, I would put it on the same level as the VII Remake. However, I am struggling. I will not say it's better than Persona 5 Royal.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, I'm a huge fangirl for P5R, and I'm sure when we rated that, my ratings were through the roof and somebody else brought it down.
Yes. Okay. As far as the RPG scale goes, it did get a 215. So for those that aren't familiar, the RPG scale is a formula I developed to determine how much of an RPG a game is. For the purposes of this show, a 100, it qualifies it to be reviewed on the main show. That puts it below Secret of Mana at 230 and above Final Fantasy VII Remake at 205.
I cannot wait for this episode to go live and what is going to be said in the Discord. I'm already looking forward to it.
It's awesome. It will be funny.
There's going to be some strong reactions.
Yes. Well, my fault that I did not get feedback from our listeners. However, we do finally have feedback right now. So Scott, I can go over those if you'd like.
Okay. Do you want to read Kabosky's?
Yes, I will take Kabosky's right now. So Kabosky said, I really enjoyed it. The ending kind of dragged with heavy dialogue, but I didn't feel underleveled or anything during the final boss, which was really nice. So same thoughts that we kind of had.
Okay. Do you, you got it pulled up, Corey?
Is it this screenshot that Bill put in here?
Yep.
You can do Claire.
So I've got, okay, I'll take Claire. Claire says, I really enjoyed it. A couple things with combat mechanics that I didn't care much for, but overall it felt pretty good. The story was also really good. Not sure it's my favorite of the series, but it's close. It felt satisfying to beat. I put 70 hours in, but I'm also a bit thorough. Story did seem to have a couple areas with slow pacing, which we've talked about. About mid-game, I kind of had to push myself to keep going, but it was worth it. Now to decide what I'm playing next, thinking something a bit shorter, I spent a good 3 months working through Arise.
I remember her updating us on her thoughts as she was playing through it, so that's really cool. And she had some of the same thoughts as us.
Yeah, the pacing and yeah.
And then we got ROB. They say, Arise was my first and at the moment only Tales game, but it was a good one. I love the art style of both cutscenes and the gameplay. The battle system is pretty cool, but I admit I haven't delved into it with each character yet, but I will when I go for the plat. The story was interesting, but some of the smaller side plots were just weird anime filler. I could see that. The ending I did feel rather empty. It just ended all of a sudden, and I was hoping for more resolution and aftermath. The music was so-so, but beyond the two main theme songs, I can't recall anything else that stuck. Overall, it was a fun game. I liked all the main characters, and I will definitely be playing the rest of this series. So it sounds like ROB felt a little closer to how I felt about the game with some of the criticisms. We did get asked for feedback last minute, so that's all we got for today. But thank you guys for submitting that.
Hey, they came through right there in a pinch.
Yeah.
Well, Bill found them, so they were back in the from like
thanks,
a month
Bill.
Ago.
So we're actually going to give the RPG Club its own mini episode because we're already flirting with an hour and a half for this one here. But any final thoughts on Tales of Arise, guys?
Loved it.
I mean, I absolutely recommend this game to anybody. And anybody who's not played a Tales game,
yep.
Do this one. Because like I said, I jumped into it, didn't have any problems, and I friggin' love this game.
Right. Okay. So we're going to move on to our outro then. And we have a new number one. Damn.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah.
And that's going to do it for today for part two of the Tales of Arise review. Rich, do you know what we're doing next week? It's going to be a catch-up episode.
I don't. It's probably, yeah, it's going to be a catch-up episode. That's fine.
And then we probably got another review coming up after that, probably from me and Bill. So look forward to that. There's been some interesting RPG news lately, so I'm sure we'll have some stuff to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of RPGs, do you want to give one more reminder about the club?
Yes. So the club is, current game is Final Fantasy 13. The checkpoint is Chapter 5, the Gapra Whitewood, which you said when Snow hits the bike, air bike, he gets on it. That's the end of that chapter, which is due May 29th.
Yes. Launching into our plugs, please rate and review us. We are now on the Spotify review system as well. It helps the show with the algorithm and all that fancy shit. It's a great way to help us. And yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah. And tell your friends, guys. We definitely appreciate all of our current community members and everything you guys have done for us. Tell your friends. Let's grow and let's keep going through the list of the many, many RPGs that we have still left to go. And another great way to support the show is Patreon. So Patreon has the ability that you guys can donate to us and help us continue what we're doing. For some rewards is early episode access, add free episodes, extra reviews, the RPG Club where you can nominate and vote for the next game, and much, much more. That is at patreon.com/RPG After Years.
If you would like, you can usually find us streaming on Twitch, the episodes live. That's Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. That can be found at twitch.tv/RPG After Years. We haven't been doing it the past couple of weeks because we found that Corey and I, both on a Zoom meeting and streaming to Twitch in the same household, was a little much for our internet. But we're kicking Corey out next week, so. You can also find me streaming on Twitch, twitch.tv/the_Scott_spot. I only mention it because I will be playing through Radical Dreamers and Chrono Cross, if you want to check that out.
Another way to interact. Sorry, were you going to say something else?
I was just going to say you can email us at rpgafteryears@gmail.com for any feedback.
Nobody wants to email you. Another way to interact with not only these guys, but with the entire community, get in the Discord. The link can be found in the show notes or on the pinned tweet on Twitter. It's a very, very active Discord. A lot of good discussion. So I highly encourage, if you want to talk about, I mean, not only RPGs, but all kinds of other stuff, get in the community.
We'd appreciate it and welcome it. Speaking of Twitter, you can find the show at RPG Years. And you can find me at the Scott Spot.
You can find me at HailBlue1569.
And me at VFL Corey.
Thank you all for participating in our Tales of Arise review. We hope you enjoyed. We hope you're flabbergasted by our final scores there. It was a fun review, and it was great to have Corey on. But for now, we need to move on. Join us next week for episode 113, in which we'll be covering all the latest news. But until then, I'm Scott.
I'm Rich.
And I'm Corey.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the RPG After Years. Bye.
Bye.
The beast has been slain. The world has been saved. Our heroes are basking in the after years. They rest in the tavern for all to hear. Their tale of victory and conquered fears. Revel in the peace that reigns through the land. All will know it was by our heroes' hands. Here in the after years. Here in the RPG after years. Here in the RPG after years.
Do Do you like video games? Of course you do. Do you believe people should have positive mental health? Also, of course you do. Then come join me on Dragoon Effect, an audio-only Let's Play podcast that cares about your mental health. Come listen as I play through games like Alan Wake, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, Doki Doki Literature Club, and talk about my life and my mental health and encourage others to do what's best for them and talk about it openly. We hope to see you soon.